As we turn this corner into March and slide through the last of the cold weather towards spring, I have heard the first wild geese heading home again. Not many yet, an occasional flock of early birds that are flying north, calling to each other and to me, harsh and exciting, as Mary Oliver says. Central Virginia does not have a major flyway, at least that I've determined so far. So the excitement of this sight and sound for me comes because I'm missing the geese that were a part of the daily life that I had in Wisconsin less than a year ago. Appleton, Wisconsin is a major flyway. And our apartment there looked out on a pond that had resident flocks and then hosted thousands of geese on their way through. So I would watch them quite often and really came to love them, partly because I did not have to clean up the landscaping and the paths after them, and because they became quite accustomed to seeing us all the time as we took walks around the pond and kept a respectable distance from us and didn't hiss at us too much. So we got a chance to learn a lot about the geese just by watching them close up day after day. And it sometimes made me think about the most oft-told illustration in American management coaching and indeed in religion that is used to teach people about leadership. Five lessons that you can learn from migrating geese. And I am guessing most of you at one time or another have heard the lessons of the geese because it is so ubiquitous now, not just in, you know, in HR training and management training, but it's over and over again used by motivational speakers and corporate coaches and mega church preachers. Often they do that with false attribution or no attribution at all. I was interested to find out that Lessons of the Geese was written back in 1972 by a science teacher who was the associate superintendent of the Baltimore schools. His name was Robert McNeish. And Dr. McNeish enjoyed going to the eastern shore of Maryland and watching the geese there, and he got intrigued by why they fly in V formations and how much and why they honk, and the way that they never leave their wounded or their tired to fend for themselves. And so he wrote a story about the five things that we could learn about leadership and about community from migrating geese as part of a lay sermon that he delivered in his Presbyterian church in Reisterstown, Maryland. So I'm going to paraphrase the punchline, the five lessons from the geese here, to quickly summarize them rather than tell the whole story, because I got other things to say today. But essentially, he told his church friends in his Sunday sermon these things. One, we can go farther as a community if we stick together and trust each other. Second, anybody who loses heart or strength can always fall back for a time. But be careful that you don't lose track of the flock, of the community, and think that you can go it alone. Third, we all have to be leaders at some time, and we all have what it takes to be leaders. Fourth, there can never be too much communication with each other. And fifth, we have to commit to taking care of each other and never forgetting each other, even those among us who are hurt or may have to stay behind. So I thought about these five lessons from the geese as my starting point today because this is the time of the year and it's a good time for us to talk about the second of the major tasks of an interim ministry time, which is we're now, you know, about a third of the way in. And that task is engaging and inspiring leadership for the next chapter in our congregation's life. And it's a good time because, as it turns out, after the service today, as you heard, we're going to be voting on a group of leaders who are willing to take on the task of searching for your next settled minister. And it's also a good time because today we kick off this year's stewardship drive for next year. That is actually the foundation for the work upon which all of the efforts of this search committee will be standing on and will depend on. The theme of the stewardship drive, as you heard Tegan, our chair for the drive this year, is all in. And it seems to me if we can be all in with our understanding of and commitment to these five lessons, then we will be able to celebrate in a few weeks, building a strong foundation for our ministerial search when we are able to pass the budget that we need come May. But I've always thought that there was one thing that was left out of the five lessons from Geese that I would also like to emphasize today. And one thing that apparently everybody, from the scientist to the poet, just take for granted, which is that in addition to staying in their formation and taking turns being up front and honking encouragement and taking care of those who fall back, each of those geese have got to do one essential thing. They got to keep flapping those wings. And it's got to be hard to keep flapping those wings. Sometimes I imagine that the honking that the geese do when they fly is actually the geese in the back saying, "Hey, is it break time yet? Can we take the day off tomorrow?" So when the geese in our pond in Wisconsin left in the fall, they were looking fat and happy. Wisconsin is a good place to be a goose. When they came back in the spring, they looked all in, exhausted. When we started thinking about using this phrase, all in, as the theme of our stewardship drive this year, I remembered that the phrase has a secondary meaning that has somewhat fallen into disuse in America. I think it's more of a British usage. All in America means totally committed. And it can mean in Canada and in Great Britain that same thing as well. But the Brits also use that phrase to describe somebody who's tired out, like a marathon runner who at the end of the race is described as all in. I've been so impressed with the diversity of leadership and leadership roles that we have in this congregation. And you know, when we get to this time of the year, March, not yet spring, still chilly and wet, we're starting the stewardship campaign again, some of the members of the congregation can start to look like those haggard geese who've been flapping their wings for a long time. They're all in. Back in the fall when we started this church year, I did hear longtime members who had done multiple leadership roles in the congregation over time, or who were doing multiple leadership roles right now, say to me directly, "You know, we're tired. I hope there's going to be some other people to step in and take over this job that I'm doing, or just take over more generally." And I understand that feeling. The good news is that everybody who makes that kind of confession to me are people who are very much still here, who are not folks who say that they're withdrawing from church life or avoiding volunteer roles. They are all in people, in both senses of the word. Totally committed to this congregation and its future, even at the times when they feel tired out. So I've been looking around so far this year and paying attention to see what is true about this congregation's leadership and just how much it's different or the same from other congregations I've served or that I know about that have a similar membership and similar issues. And what I see is that you really do handle your leadership challenges better than most. And here is some of the reasons why I know that. When I sat down at my first Board of Trustees meeting this fall, I saw a table of people who had all been part of the congregation for 10 years or less, and that were, I believe, all under the age of 60. In fact, most of you actually under the age of 50, I think. And you know, that's not usual. And I also met all but one of the last five board presidents quite readily last fall, each of them continuing to play important volunteer and leadership roles in various ways in the congregation. And right away, what that told me is that you believe in and try to practice leadership rotation. And you don't drive people away by demanding too much from them, so that the only way that they can find to rotate out of leadership is to leave the congregation, which is true in some places. And I've met people who have taken a break from leadership or who stopped attending on Sunday morning for a time, and I'm aware that they are still staying connected to people of the congregation through sustaining friendships. And that's another encouraging thing to me. Dr. McNeish noted that the migrating geese rotate their positions all the time as the lead goose and the geese towards the front get tired. But what was interesting to him was that there wasn't one lead goose for the entire long migration who just needed a break every once in a while, who was basically seen as the flock leader most of the time. His lesson from that insight was that committing to routine changes in leadership is a healthy thing, even though the gifts that one person may have that they bring to a particular job are different than the last person that served in that role. Everybody in the flock gets a chance to lead somewhere, somehow, as they all move together towards where they want to go. And we, I think, recognize that in this congregation, just as we recognize the truth in several of the other lessons from the geese, that having a common direction and a sense of community and a mutual discipline of encouragement gets us where we want to go faster and easier. And that's because, like geese or like cyclists, some of you are cyclists, being leaders and followers is easier when you can draft on each other, carry each other, encourage each other. In the harsh and exciting honking of the geese that Mary Oliver heard, our scientist, Robert McNeish, heard something else. He heard a constant communication that was keeping the group together through their long journey. And I love this congregation for the constant power of encouragement that I feel here to everybody who comes. It's represented in what we say in services, but more importantly, it's represented in what you do with each other face to face. Encouragement to be who you are, to become known, to risk relationship with each other in ways that are both challenging and comforting. This power of encouragement represented to Dr. McNeish the integrity of the flock of geese, and he translated that into a human lesson about integrity as essential to leadership. Integrity meaning the strength to stand by one's heart or core values and to be an encourager of that heart, that same heart, that attention to core values in others. In the reading this morning, we heard about the importance of knowing your values for people who aspire to be or are asked to be leaders. Values provide boundless energy to overcome all obstacles and resiliency to focus on the future. And I believe that the values that this congregation represents are needed more than ever in the world in which we live today. In proclaiming a love that is beyond belief and beyond politics, we point to the integrity of our human relationships and to our belief in the worth and the dignity of each person as the foundation of a spiritual life. The Time for All Ages story that I offered this morning has another lesson about integrity, about being true to who you are and the values you stand for as more important than any particular set of skills that you might have that would make you useful in leadership. Everybody but Ping feels like they have to impress the emperor by trying to be the gardener that will produce the best product, even if they had to fake it. And Ping felt that all he could do was his best, not understanding that it was in presenting that pot that he thought was empty would be what would show the emperor that he would be a leader that people could trust. So in this time of transition, we need leadership from everybody in this congregation. The blessing and the curse of a congregation this size is it's too small for anyone to hide from leadership roles and too big to rely on only a little handful of people to do it all. So now when I say leadership roles, don't think that this means that you are only being a leader if you take a turn as board president or chair of this or chair of that. There are many ways and many places in the life of this congregation to show your integrity by taking part in something that needs to be done. And not the least of these, in fact, maybe one of the most important of these, is the decision that you make about how you support this year's and next year's and the year after that stewardship drive with your pledge. So we ask you to be all in with the stewardship drive this year because we ask you to be a leader in two different ways. First is just by participating, to actually make that pledge prediction of your giving next year so that we can plan a realistic budget. That's a pretty modest and understandable request. Putting money in the plate doesn't cut it, doesn't help us. I mean, it's nice. There's a little budget line item for it, but we need your prediction, your pledge prediction for next year. This is a congregation built not on a creed of common beliefs that are mandatory. Everybody understands that. But instead on covenant or promise to support each other in our spiritual lives. And a pledge to set your personal target for financial giving next year is part of that covenant, just as much as your promise to respect the beliefs of others who are your fellow members. And the second aspect of the all-in theme for this year asks you to not only pledge, but to make an increase in your giving to a higher level that is feeling good for you, or I would say maybe even feels a little uncomfortable at first. I have experienced every time I've made a significant new gift or increase in my giving to the congregations or other organizations that I support, it actually feels uncomfortable before it feels good. There's this phrase, give till it feels good. Well, I think you feel uncomfortable at first. And I know that in different ways you get asked to be more generous every year. Why should you respond this year, especially when you feel like you may have stretched in the past? Well, there's a good reason, and I want to state this reason as strongly and clearly as I can from my perspective about why this year is a little different. This is a sermon that's been mostly about leadership, and not until now about the budget specifically for a reason, and that reason is that a couple of decades ago, this congregation made a decision about leadership that has served you well. You decided that this community could fulfill its mission and achieve its goals and be sustainable long-term if you had professional ministry. And I think, overall, that has worked really well for you. You have just finished 10 years of a full-time ministry that, from everything I can see, was quite satisfying for all of you. And believe me, a run like that is something to cherish and be proud of. Congregations in your size range don't often hold ministers that long. So you have something good going on here, which perhaps you take for granted. And maybe take for granted the ways that a minister exerts unique leadership apart from Sunday morning, which is the most visible thing. Leadership that is often invisible. This leadership certainly involves things that you, as the members of the congregation, already do with each other and will continue to do. Encouragement, appreciation, recruitment, support, ideas, vision. But the way that a professional and full-time minister does those things adds a dimension to your church's life and health that is not going to be created in other ways. So this congregation's leadership transition to a new full-time ministry is a critical time for your personal leadership and decision-making. If enough of you were to make the decision to keep your personal pledge this year at the same amount as last year, then you will have the same budget that offered the same compensation package as Reverend Anya had in her last year, a compensation package which was only 1% higher than it was in the previous 2 years. And folks, we already know from the experience of searching last year for a full-time interim minister that that is not enough to give you a range of choices in professional ministry that you deserve. The ministers that you want to attract will look at what's called the GEO Index, the economic ranking for Loudoun County, Virginia, and see it is rated as the fifth highest cost of living place out of seven possible levels, which means that wages are between 109 and 115% higher than the U.S. average. Later this morning, you're going to be voting on a search committee to find that next minister, and you're going to ask them to do a bunch of work. Prepare a complex web page that will describe the congregation in glowing and vivid terms, and everybody will, they'll do a great job at that. And then the ministers will look at that, and they'll look at the financials, and they'll look at the compensation package of this coming year's budget. This coming year's budget. Not the budget 2 years from now that the new minister will be receiving a salary from. It's the coming year's budget. Because that's what will get ministerial candidates to click on your website and express interest. And the compensation package you need means that the next budget needs to be $30,000 higher than what was in the budget for the current year. A budget of the current year whose compensation package could not attract a full-time interim minister. This gap is not something that happened all at once. Some of it happens for reasons that are not your fault. You know, that are part of the cost of living here. But some of it happens because of dozens and dozens of individual decisions made by many of you and by Reverend Anya, frankly, to value other things in your lives and in your congregation more highly than you valued rising standards for ministerial compensation. And those many individual decisions may have seemed to make sense at the time, but long term, one by one, those are the decisions that erode the sustainability of a congregation. So if this year, if you make a decision to keep your pledge at the same level, when my math says it should be going up by at least $25 per month per pledge, that's the math, then that is a vote. That is a vote for part-time ministry in your future. And that is, in my opinion, a vote for a less sustainable congregation than you had during Reverend Anya's ministry. Forgive my bluntness. I hope this is okay. don't kid yourselves that the decision about the kind of ministry you want to happen can be made sometime next year after you test the market. Your vote for full-time ministry is actually happening on your pledge card this year, and it needs to be a higher number. Every decision matters. Thank you for that, amen. So you may think you're bringing a pot that looks pretty empty. But, you know, all you can do is bring it forward with integrity and with thoughtful reflection on what this congregation means to you. And you know, listen with an open heart to what I've had to say today, and your decision will be enough. I have loved the Mary Oliver poem Wild Geese for a long time because it also reminds me of what I value most in our Unitarian Universalist congregations. Here we don't tell you that you have to be good and good enough to be a part of us. We will accept you where you're coming from and for who you are. And we don't tell you that you have to cross some spiritual desert on your knees for 100 miles repenting to be seen as the child of the divine and worthy and welcome in this world. All we ask you to do is fall in love. Fall in love with this little piece of our blessed and hurting world, this little piece of paradise that we have available to us each week. Fall in love and be part of the flock. Encourage each other with all of the different gifts that you can bring from time and talent and treasure. And join the journey that we are making together for each other and for the sake of generations that are following us. We each have our place in the family of things. And each week, we help you imagine into being this place, representing that family where you are at home. Listen to the call. Be all in.